canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Welcome back to Canine Detection Collaborative. My name is Crystal Wing, and I am here in Missouri and wanting to say hello to Robin Grubel of Iowa.
Hello.
And Stacey Barnett in New Jersey.
Hello.
We're all over the place. We're finally home.
Yay.
In our respective homes.
Well, tonight.
Yeah.
For this evening. Right.
Yeah, I get back on the road tomorrow.
Last weekend, I went up and visited Robin and had an excellent training and kind of got out of my head a little bit. And it brought
Which
up some
always good.
Really good. Yeah, it really brought up some good training things that happened. And that leads us into some ideas for this episode. So things that you are teaching that you inadvertently can make mistakes when you're trying to teach something else, or that can overwhelm you because you don't know what to train, and it just kind of goes all over. So get ready, buckle up. Let's see where we go today.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes I get almost like stuck a little bit because there's so many different things I want to train. And I sometimes worry that whatever I do is going to potentially get in the way of what I'm going to do later. So like, if I teach it one way, is that going to preclude me from being able to do something else that's related? Or I get into like this paralysis, you know?
Well, I have come to realize that sometimes I'm training something and all of a sudden I get down a path. Mm-hmm. And I'll use the example of the fact that when I typically teach my dogs to start in detection work, I wasn't overly concerned about how square they were in a heel.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in detection work, that just really doesn't matter.
Right.
And then, so they would think that, and I use the cue right here, typically for the labs. For Nico, it means come slam against my leg on the left side and stare lovingly into my eyeballs, which is awesome, except for my knee. But when I say right here to the labs, it actually turns into a come over, sit sort of in the heel-ish position,
mm-hmm.
typically at a 45 degree angle, because then I turn and face them and then that's where I send them to go search.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're trying to do square sits or straight sits for gun dog work, that doesn't work so well. And so then I have to go through a whole process
of reteaching.
No, remember when I reinforced you a bajillion times for that thing?
Rules are different now.
Sorry, I'm renegotiating the contract. And now we have to do this.
Yeah.
And it's
Or you have a situation where maybe my criteria was really sloppy because that like never happens, right? And now I actually want to use the behavior for something more than just, you know, lay down. Down was actually my little trouble spot. Because Brava, I would escort her down and she'd go like halfway down. I'm like all the way down. Then I'm like, put your head down. So we had like three different cues to get it down. And now I'm like, all right. So I want to do ARSA, right? And I'm like, no, you need to like be able to lay down on one cue. So now I'm having to, now I've like retrained that and I wanted to retrain it as a fold back down. And then I had to name it something different because what I had named it meant we go part of the way down and then we wait for more cues and we go part of the way down and we may wait for more cues. So because it wasn't that important before and now it's important. And like the other thing I've also realized is even just because like agility and stuff like that, I trained a start line stay. Well, that's a really active stay. Like the dogs are in a high state of arousal, ready to bust a groove. Getting a long duration on that is actually very challenging. So different examples of that. So like I do these stay games, right, with powder, with the sliders. They are in high arousal. It's a little different trying to actually ask her to stay when she's not in a high state of arousal. It's fascinating.
I'm going to throw in two things that you guys maybe think of. One of them was you're saying that it's not as important as before. And Robin mentioned your knee. And so that was something that I found that I didn't really care about leash walking. I had management tools. So with Checkmate, mm-hmm. I have a great leash that Susan Cleveland from the Free Badger, a Fluffy Badger. There we go. So I'm like, words. It's been a long day and I'm still like getting over this.
We'll put her in the show notes as well. She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, she is amazing.
But this leash is amazing.
Yes.
Because about a foot up the leash, there's a connector. And then on that connector, you connect a different toy. And then when he's playing with the toy, it's not pulling on the leash that's connected to his neck. And so then that's what I use for my get from point A to point B. And so that way, if he ever does drop his toy, well, it's not gone forever. And I still have him on a leash at that point. So this is working. Well, now I have a torn rotator cuff and a torn front of my shoulder, and I have torn meniscus and and just that thrashing and all of that movement. You know, I have to start thinking, you know, I'm going to need shoulder surgery and I need a way to safely get my dogs from point A to point B. So I think that that's something we have to consider, is that things that weren't as important before for us can become important. So then the question I have, do you think it's easier for us to change our behavior or for them to change theirs? Just anecdotally.
I'm going to be laughing about that one for a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it is easier.
Take all the responsibility.
Yeah. I think it is easier for us to be conscious about the fact that we now have to change our behavior. We still will fall into old habits because I still do it with the dogs with the, sloppy sits thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think let's not even talk about the 100 million times while we're training over the summer that Crystal has to say, seam of your pants. For reinforcing, for sitting in the right spot for the dog.
Yeah.
Right. For my square sit.
Yeah. On the outside of your seam. So it's their noses on the outside seam instead of like on your thigh or out in no man's land, just for visual.
Right. Just so you guys. Yeah. And so it is hard for us to change our habitual behavior.
It is. I think it's actually harder, definitely harder for me.
I would agree.
I think my dogs pick up the new criteria pretty quickly, especially when I name it something different and just trying to avoid it. So then they're like, oh, this is something different. I'm like, yeah. They're like, okay, cool. I can do that. But I'm like, okay, now I have to think about it different, and I have to prioritize it. I
mean, that requires us to be consistent.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole, oh my God, no, be consistent about how we're doing this thing. Yeah. It's just,
and I can appreciate the saying old dog, new tricks, but I really think like what you're both saying, it's so much harder for me to change than it is them. And I feel like even though I've rewarded something, like you said, a bajillion times, they still are such great learners. And they pick up on our patterns and they pick up on what's reinforcing very easily.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's something to be aware of. And I think that's interesting that all three of us, and I kind of threw that at you, you know, just last second there.
Yeah.
But I totally agree. I do think that they are so capable. And I don't think a lot of times we give them quite the credit that we should for that.
Yeah. I mean, Brava's down sucks. Her pots is gorgeous.
It's the same.
Right.
Right.
It's renamed, retrained. And now it's this nice little fold back down and it's quick.
Because even they'll say the matching law, you know, and you have to do so many repetitions of this new way to combat the how many ever times you've done it the old way. And I get that. But I think also it depends on how you're training it and how you're teaching it. Because, you know, they say that when you teach it through play, that it's so much faster and that the connections happen sooner. And so I don't know. I think there's so many variables involved. But that also takes me to the second point. And you're talking about teaching a behavior in high arousal. Mm-hmm. And I did an experiment with Radish that it's not biting me in the butt necessarily, but it's been fascinating. I taught sit in a very direct way, lots of reinforcement, capturing, shaping, you know, setting up the environment, all the things. But with her down, I taught that in very high arousal.
Okay.
So it was tugging to a down. I mean, it was as high arousal as I could possibly get.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to me now that when she is in super high arousal, if I ask for anything, the only thing she can think in that moment, you guessed it, is down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually Brava. Like my friend Chris gave me this, actually she gave Powder a ball and everybody plays with it. So it's this blue ball and it's really cool. It's about the size of her green ball. and it's got kind of a handle on it. I think it's made by Kong, and it's got a tennis ball on the inside and the whole thing squeaks, right? So all the dogs love it. So I was outside with Brava today and I wanted to practice getting her in a heel position. And I was going to reward it. I was so proud of her because she'd bring me this thing. She'd drop it on my feet and she's like, oh my God, let's do the thing, right? So I tell her, Fuss, right? So she, and then she lays down because that's what I was teaching her in that high state of arousal. And I'm like, okay, so I'm trying to like reset her. And when she got it, you know, then I would kick the ball. She had a blast. She had a blast. It was actually a whole lot of fun, but I would agree with that. With the arousal, what's harder, I think, is when I'm training it in a high state, but then I actually want the dog to do it in a lower state of arousal. That's where I'm just not sure if I've got that same, and I still have to experiment with that a little bit. So see if I have that same level of focus, if the dog is not in the high state of arousal. So for instance, with a stay, right? I can get the stay really, really well with powder in a high state of arousal. She did a 5 minute out of sight. But I wonder, will I be able to get that in a lower state of arousal? And I don't think I can, if that makes sense.
You can.
I mean, not yet.
Right.
Not yet.
Maybe not this moment, but for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, that's where the challenge is, I think.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I wish I would have considered was that it's easier to teach the down in a really high state versus the sit. But I mean, it's both possible. But I wish that I would have taken the same high arousal and enthusiasm teaching the sit. And not as precision and thinking about, I want this precise, this tuck, this, I had these kind of criteria on it. Whereas the down didn't have criteria. It was just slam your body down and do it through play. And so now if that's the high arousal behavior that is her go-to, I wanted that to be my trained final response.
Mm. Oh, okay. So now that's a little bit slower.
I should have taught that thing with all of the excitement, because we were training with Joe Huxel this last weekend, and she really made me think a lot about the dog's emotional state, their arousal state, their, like, when they get the chance to do their TFR, that you should see that look in their eye, that bliss, that dopamine hit happens when they TFR, because it's just such a blissful feeling to recognize the odor, to do the thing, and the reward, it's the slot machine. And I don't have that on the sit, because the sit was something that I worked so hard on being conditioning and straight and precise and. Mm-hmm. Whereas the down, I was like, I don't care about that as much, because that's just going to be fun. And I just want you to throw your body down. And I totally would change that if I could go back and do it again. Because the problem that I'm having that we're diagnosing with Radish right now in me is that I'm having all the stress of my life and work and everything. Mm. So she's feeding off of that stress and she has this desire and you can see it. I know that she enjoys her reward. She's shown me that. Like, she wants to do the whatever she needs to do to get the thing. And she walked odor. And I'm just like, whoa. We're on a track. It's not a good track. And so then she did it again. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So then of course my stressful life has now compounded, because the thing that I love doing and that's not stressful for me is working with my dogs.
Right.
And now all of a sudden that just got stressful. Oh. So that's all building, right?
Right.
So what I had to recognize was, and I think that her theory is right, is that she wants to be right. Radish wants to be right.
Mm-hmm.
But she can't, because when I'm super stressed like that too, I go to IGP mode. I am like the German precision. Here's my criteria. You should sit like this at this distance. And, you know, and so I turn into that person.
Yeah.
And so she's like, can't do it perfect. I'm just going to go over here now.
Too much pressure.
And yeah, it's just so much pressure. And getting to go back up to the farm, I felt my shoulders drop down out of my ears and they went back to where they're supposed to be. And my neck, I have a neck. Did you know that? I do.
It was amazing. I saw it appear from when you showed up on Friday to Sunday. I was like, oh, that's what she looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I have a neck. And so feeling that stress release and seeing my girl do such a great job. We both just fed off of each other. We both built our confidence back.
Wow.
And instead of worrying about being precise, it was a thing about thinking about the criteria. Can your dog sit when she gets near odor? And it's like, well, yeah, okay, so have a big party. It doesn't have to be 3 inches and facing this way and all the things. Just have a party when she sits. And guess what? Tonight, we went training again back here at home. I was mental management. I said, you know what? Leave the stuff where it needs to leave. You're out training your dog. We got out. We connected. I sent my dog. She was about 5 feet from odor. She slammed her butt down so hard. And you know what I did? I didn't resort to my IGP ways of saying, nope, you're 4 feet too far. Instead, I said, woo-hoo. And we had a blast. We had so much fun.
Wow.
Her joy, her confidence was beautiful. My joy, my confidence was beautiful. Wow. And I don't even care that it wasn't within the criteria of how far it's supposed to be, because right now my criteria...
You can tighten that crap.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a long story, but...
It's okay, because I think that this is one of those things that we often, social media portrays, that everybody's training goes fabulously awesome every single time you get your dog out of the car. And that is just not true.
No,
but that's not even what I was thriving off of. It's I have plans. I have progression plans. I have the step-by-step that I'm following. We're past that point. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not doing that anymore. You don't sit 5 feet away. Like, oh, we're better than that. Okay, but we're not better than that when I'm not myself and there's all these other variables. And that's what I wasn't putting into it. So I kept making the criteria harder and harder and harder. And she's like, do it, I'm out.
Oh, that reminds me. You know that I think it's like a meme or whatever. It's kind of like it's like what dog training, what people think it is. And it's that straight line that goes from like from here to, I'm trying to draw like a diagonal, like up a mountain, like here to here. Is
right.
Perfect.
And there's the one that when the guy on the bicycle that falls into like, the
depths of despair. Then like what it really is. And then there's like these gullies and these rifts and these, when all this like, it's perception and reality. Right. And I think what we're saying is that that's just dog training.
And I'm saying right now, put a bell on my handlebars and put a card in my wheel and I'm back to Happyville.
Right.
That is so cool.
We'll see where it goes. But I think the management piece of my mind and the stress and the recognition of that, and that when my brain is not there, and here was the other thing that we talked about today. Another good thing that I should pay attention to is when we go to bed at night, if she is pushing me into the ground, like pushing me into the bed,
okay,
that's telling me that I'm not right.
Wow.
Because she does that where when she's like, you're off, she will not let me up. She just like jumps on me and like holds me down.
Wow.
And like last night, I'm like, you guys.
Call that Labrador, but whatever.
That. Last night though, I was like, you guys, I want to cuddle a dog. Like there was no radish to be found. She's like, no, you're fine. I'm going to go sleep over here tonight.
Oh my
I'm
gosh,
tired of
funny.
Working every night.
You're good now. You're good. I'll be over here if you need me.
But... Yeah. She's like, dude, I just need to get some rest.
I was like, when I sleep, it's like, can you get off my side? Just, yeah. I get all out of whack, like physically.
So if I could go back, I would definitely teach my sit in a really fun, high arousal way and not have all the crazy criteria and all the conditioning thoughts. And I would just go back and have that be the most fun thing she's ever done in her whole life. If I want that to be my TFR.
I love that.
And I think that that's absolutely something for us to be conscious about as we teach things is how are you teaching them?
Yep.
And the fact that training can be messy.
Yes.
No. Should be. Will be.
Should be. Yes.
Yeah.
Not even can be. Like it is going to be.
It will be. Yeah. I mean, what I like to say that every time I get my dogs out of a car, I have this super awesome plan. Yeah. Usually most of the time I do, but sometimes it does. It seriously goes, we take a hard right or left turn and it's like, wow. I guess that's what we're working on today. Or there's something else going on that maybe my head isn't in the game. And it is messy. We ended up talking a lot this summer about just allowing people to tinker with some of what they were doing in training. And because sometimes you actually do have to do a little bit of tinkering to see how is this going to...
Oh, if it's going to work.
If it's going to work.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. And so you have to be able to play with those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it really comes down to, if you think about it, like I tell people this all the time. You really can't truly mess up you can truly mess up the dog, but the little bits and pieces, you can fix most things.
As long as you don't get too far down a path.
Yeah. Of course, that down, Brava's down was pretty far down the path. Right. But you
go back and you tinker and you play with teaching a different way to do it.
Yeah, I did it differently. And then I named it something new. So for her, it's a totally different behavior.
Right.
You know, it's just completely different behavior.
Yeah.
And some people talk about poisoned cues and things. And I think that a lot of times we can even work through those. So poisoned cue being that you've said something and now it's this behavior. But you can still use that for other things.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like you get a little bit too
It's not like she, not like
about
she
that.
Doesn't know that.
It can be the informal version of that. And then you can make a formal version of it.
Yeah. Because I don't want to give her the formal version unless I expect the formal criteria is really what it comes down to. Like if I want certain criteria, that's the cue that triggers that criteria. Otherwise, if I don't care about the criteria, I don't want to give her the formal cue.
Right.
Because then if she gives me, if my criteria is not the same and I'm going to mess it up.
It's really funny because you talk about that. I realize I have like three different cues for sit.
Okay.
Right. I have sit, which means anything from run to me and sit, or I'm actually sit will mean for some of the dogs. When I say sit, that means put your butt on the ground as fast as you possibly can, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's sit. Right here is come over, be somewhere on the left side of me in a general sitting position,
mm-hmm.
except for Nico, who is like, I must be plastered to your leg. And then all of the hunting or the labs have left and right heel. Which is when I give you that verbal cue and that hand signal, you should come, should swing into left or right heel sitting and sit in position, in heel position. So it's the formal sit. And so I have different cues for all of those different behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating that we can teach the dogs all of that stuff.
Oh, and look at poor Checkmate. He's got five different sits. Because he's got sit, which mm-hmm. is just in general, everybody can say that to him because, you know, I don't care. Then with me is he comes to either my right or left side and sits. And then I have Opie, which mm-hmm. is come to my left side because I made Fringlish, French English words instead of Opie. So Opie, come to my left and sit and stare in my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Rock, which in position changes means to a rock back sit versus a tuck sit.
Okay.
So, and then there's Ozzy, which is a tuck sit.
Wow. Yeah. And they all have a different purpose, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have a purpose for each. And that's the part that it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Chris, you go, I don't have a stay. I have a weight. Well, actually I've moved away from I do have a weight, but then I've also started being very clear on if I give the dog a position cue that they're supposed to sustain that. So that turns into an implied stay. But originally I never taught the word stay because I wanted to save that word for something a little bit more formal. So I taught them wait. And so I never used stay. It's kind of funny. So now I have this word out there. I've never used it because
I don't
really
have stay either. I was trying to think if I had anything, but I don't have a stay.
I don't really have a
stay. When I get sloppy and I have verbal diarrhea at my dogs, I have a stay.
That's right. Don't
wait,
you move.
Stay. Don't move. Hey. Then I wag a finger and the whole nine yards, right?
Really, it's the finger wag.
It's the finger wag that
is the I'm glaring at you. Don't you dare move. You need to keep your on the ground.
It's really funny because Nico and I just were getting ready to go take our recertification for FEMA. And in order to do that, we have to take a pretest. It's called the Fundamental Skills Assessment. And during that, you actually, as the dog's walking across one of the obstacles, you actually have to stop them on a verbal cue, turn them around so they can look at you, and then you actually give them another cue so they turn around and go back the direction they were going to begin with. And I was training it at home, and I was doing this whole little wait, Then I tried stop. Then I started stay. I think I even tried whoa. And he goes like, what are you doing? You're dumb.
Just communicate with me. Be consistent and I'll do it.
No kidding. Oh my gosh. And we got to the test and I sent him over the thing. And out of my mouth, I didn't realize it until we got off the thing, comes like this drill sergeant weight out of my mouth. Nico stops, turns around and looks at me and says, that's the cue. And I said, I said, go on or whatever it was. And he turned around and walked back the other direction. And one of the people evaluating was like, that was a really harsh cue, Robin. I'm like, I was afraid he wasn't going to do it.
Oh my God.
So it came out sounding like a really annoyed teacher, I'm sure.
With agility, it's kind of funny, not funny. So last year I had some issues with Brava with her contact criteria. And I realized I had trained it in a very fuzzy manner. So like the end of a dog walk I wanted her to keep her back 2 feet on and be at the end, front 2 feet off. And it's called a 2-on-2-off. And I had just basically that I had only really trained, just don't leave the end of it. And I had called it target. So then I had to teach her, I taught her a new cue, touch. And so now if I say touch, she does it correctly. But otherwise, anyway, it is funny. It's like sometimes just naming it something different can just make a big, big difference.
This one may seem Mondo ring specific, but it really isn't. It kind of applies to all things. But what happened in my situation was that at the back door, I opened the back door on loose in the backyard. And if we go through the gate, I open the gate and the dogs go run through the gate and they go play in the place. And then you get to the competition field and you open the gate and you heel in off leash and you put them in a down. So we open the gate and what do you think the dogs did? It did not heel nicely into a down. Dog said, dog park, woohoo. And I don't go to dog park, but that behavior is like, we're free, crazy. And so I thought, how many times have I reinforced? This is multiple times a day that I have said, go be crazy dog. Don't have to heel with me, not through the threshold. You just go do the thing. And so that did take a little bit of changing. And it primarily, you know who had the hardest time changing?
You.
Yeah, that's me.
that whole consistency right here. Thing, right?
Yeah. I know, because sometimes it's like, it's just easier to just let them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is something you said earlier that I want to go back to, because it's my brain does, about you can't really mess up your dog.
Yeah.
There are certain times that we really have to trust the people that we train with.
I mean, you can, but...
Yes.
I was talking more like the non-extreme.
Yes. And I'll go with a kind of it felt very extreme in the moment. I would not have taught Yukon to do cadaver with a nose on. That is not what I would have done. I didn't know that I wanted to do cadaver. I didn't want to do cadaver. I honestly still kind of don't, because it's really gross and... It just stinks and I gag, but whatever. Robin can attest to that one. So
yes,
I was doing Center 6 through the School of Canine Science. And the first thing we did was you teach them a really nice duration nose touch to your hand. And then I'd already taught that with Fanny Gott's class. It was great. And then you teach them that on a coin. And so they have this really nice duration nose target on the thing and it's gorgeous. And so then you get to where they're sitting and staring at the thing, and that's all working great. But I don't think that I would have done so much nose on behavior and nose in and like nose right there had I known that I was going to do cadaver training, because some dogs find the odor not repulsive like I do. And my Yukon finds it very appealing. It's a very appetitive feeling for him. And so the first time, or one of the first times out with my group that I was training with, I said, okay, here's the thing. It cannot be accessible, and it can't be large, because he hasn't done those things. We're good, right? Yeah, well, it was both of those things. And so given the opportunity, my boy went and took the source. Source is another name for dead guy. and took off running in the woods with it. Oh, it was his
because
now.
Because then it became a party of Chase.
Oh.
He knew that I was not going to be happy with that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was like, if I can get far enough away, then I can start consuming this thing before you can get to me.
No.
So we got the thing back. It was not pleasant. And it took me, I mean, months and months and months to get to the point. And I still wouldn't trust him. I still think if given the opportunity, if I'm out of sight and it's there, he's going to be a chow hound. Now, would that have happened anyway? I don't know. But it was so early in our training that I had to get really, really creative about communicating to him that when he got to source, not only did he need a down, but now you have to back up down.
Yeah.
So I don't want you close to it. I want you to back up a good foot away and then lay down. And so I had to add more criteria and more things. So was it because my foundation was nose on? Was it because of that bad setup? Was it, you know, there's a lot of questions, but there's things that I would definitely do differently. And I did those things differently with Radish. Yeah. And she doesn't have any desire to eat it.
Yeah.
But is that because of the way that I taught it for the second dog? Or is that because of the dog that they are?
I think every dog is different anyway, because if I look at how I train Brava and Powder, it's actually very, very similar, but the result was very, very different. And I they're half sisters, and I know Yukon and Radish are actually really closely related.
Yeah. 25%.
Right. So, and
you know, same grandpa.
50%. The girls are 50%, but very, very different dogs. So they have different, you know, how the training that I apply is going to get, it has the potential to come out in different ways. Where Brava has, and actually I always love this nice little passive indication that she gave me. I'm going to call it the look back, which I will never purposely create or train the dog. Again, it's one of these things where, and it didn't even bite me in the butt until I got to the very higher levels, basically because of her drive. And because the hides just were not quite as complicated, but it's one of those things where sometimes you train something and you don't realize that you're training something that's going to get you into trouble.
Yeah. You don't know the consequences, right?
You don't know the consequences. Exactly. Yeah. And now it's tough. And so I end up trying to swing the pendulum. And so half of our training is swinging the pendulum back and forth just to try to keep her accurate. Cause the whole, and people are probably saying, well, what's wrong with the look back? Well, the look back, if you think about it, is when the dog gives you a look back, the dog has chosen the criteria about how to source the hide. It's their choice, right? You haven't set the criteria, they're setting the criteria. And very quickly that can turn, and especially if you have a dog that makes decisions very quickly, that can turn into off-source behavior very, very quickly.
And that's hard. I mean, I can absolutely see where the look back part is hard because they're also looking at you to check in for information. And sometimes you may capture that look back of their close to odor or something. Yeah. So very difficult.
I have less of an issue with that, mostly because I tend to handle a little bit out of distance from my dog. So they don't tend to look back at me that much, but I see that with a lot of other people. Definitely. I think with her though, a lot of it has to do with how quickly she makes snap decisions. Right. And because she set the criteria, because she chose the final response, and because of the speed of her decision-making, those pieces, it's like a perfect storm for a fringe alert, which is so, those of you who want to talk about pink dogs, that's how you create one.
That's how you create a pink dog.
And I think people would say now that I'm creating a pink dog with Radish, red just means you're closer to source and pink just is further away. There we go. That's enough said. So people would say that now I'm creating a pink dog with Radish because I'm letting her be however far away. But again, it's that pendulum swing and trying to fix the thing. And that's where I think with Yukon, because his foundation is that nose poke, that even when I taught him to back up down, if it was any question mark, he'd want to nose poke it. Well, as soon as you nose poke that thing that you want to consume, well, that's too tempting, especially for a dog that struggles with impulse control. So with that being the foundation, that would always be the thing he'd want to go back to. I kind of go back to Radish. the thing in high arousal that she wants to go to is a down. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
they go to the things that make sense that you've taught. And yeah, it's like, okay, all right, I see what I did there.
Yeah. If right. I wasn't searching for a birch and I was searching for a hot dog, I certainly wouldn't want to go to the source behavior. That's for sure. Not with these girls. So it's kind of like, yeah. And you know, sometimes when I'm teaching something new, like I do, I'm always sitting here trying to think of like, okay, if I train it this way, is it going to mess up if I want to do something with this later?
Oh my gosh. The conversations we have, I don't think people understand. Sometimes it's the phone a friend.
Yeah.
And then you start having all of those conversations about, okay, what am I training? How do I train this behavior? How does it conflict with anything else that I may have taught? Or what do I have in the dog's repertoire that I can modify a little bit to make the learning easier? And just having those trainer conversations versus, and then you still kind of have to go out and tinker with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's still context, right? So it's kind of like, so for instance, you really can have a duck dog who can play tug of war, right?
Yes, you can.
So it's about context.
Correct.
And of course, you know, to get powder out of the duck diving pool, we'd play tug of war with a bumper. So we'll have to see if I decide to do more with that, what I may have to do there. Yeah. That one just occurred to me.
But that goes back to the pros and cons from last week with the stupid question today. You know, it was what about cross training and a single versus dual? And
that is definitely a con.
Well, and that's something. So Checkmate, we do three different protection sports and we do tracking. Yeah. And UConn, I was doing live and, you know, the area search and the cadaver. And Radish, I'm just doing the cadaver, but then also, and I'm starting to do our BH because I want to get into ARSA with her. And then I was like, you know, I love watching the bird dog stuff and I could start doing some of that foundation because I love that so much.
Uh-huh.
So then that's where the con, I think, really comes in, because you do kind of start to get a little paralyzed at times because then it's like, wait, if I do want to do that with her in the future, then I don't want to do this now. So what should I do now instead? And then let's just go train your dog. But then when you just go train your dog, well, now you've made a choice that you have to figure out something else in the future. And so I'm like, future me, are you going to like this? I asked myself that. Future Crystal, will you appreciate this moment now? Or are you just going to be like, that was dumb?
Well, and that's where the phone a friend comes. So I was like furiously messaging Robin, for a whistle recall, what do they do with duck dogs? Because just in case I want to do this with my Labradors, right? Because I didn't want to give my dogs like a whistle recall that sounded like the sit if I wanted to do, you know, like I was sitting here going, I'm paralyzed with like what cue to give my dogs, because I don't want to mess it up for something that I haven't even done anything with, but may in the future.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It is. It's hard. And then the answer is, well, there's the cues that everybody else uses. And then there are the cues that you use with your dogs. I mean, how many people do I know use Korean, except for people in Korea, to
probably
teach
a whole
their
country,
dogs?
But yes.
Right. How many Americans teach their dogs in, because I need throwaway cues.
Yeah.
And so
a list of throwaway cues. Like here's a list that we borrow from each other. Because I can spend an entire day thinking of a freaking cue that I'm not even going to use.
Well, then there's Crystal, who's like Little Miss Creative and comes, well, why don't you just use cushion?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But that was like, I have a sense of humor because it was just like, he's never going to compete. And I'm like, oh crap, he's competing. So I'm like apologizing profusely to every judge. I'm like, okay, I'm not making fun of anybody. I have a bad sense of humor. Please don't judge me. Actually, no, judge me, but just don't judge. You know what I mean?
Don't judge my cues.
Don't be overly judgy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, don't judge my weirdness.
It's...
And then like all of the, because I do the multiple markers, the location specific markers. So even just that alone. And then I have people like, can you share a list of all of them that you have? I'm like, do you really want that? Because, but I have to do words that make sense. Like if I want them to, like for my hand, I'm going to say eat because that's from my hand. And then I was saying get it for everything that I threw. But then I realized I needed to split that between do you get the toy or do you get the food? Because when I'd say get it and I'd throw food,
yeah,
check me, they go, no, you're throwing a toy.
Not the right one. Right.
And I'm like, but it is the right one. So now,
because you were using get it to help with the outs.
Yes. And so then when I would throw food, he's like, that's not worth it. Now, if you throw the toy, that's worth it. So yeah. Great is get the food and get it is get the toy. And he will very easily and nice. Now, if I say out and then I say get it, he knows that out has now become pop your head back away. And so then when I throw the toy over and he gets it from behind him, well, now the anticipation of the reward is coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just that clarification in the words, I only make words when I need them.
Yeah. I do feel like I just need a list of just stuff that I just need a cue list because I get like, I don't know what to call this.
So when I'm working with coaching clients, I tend to use the word potato or eggplant a lot. You can call it eggplant for all I care.
Yeah. You were telling me, I was asking you about the pieces of the fine refine and you're like, just call this thing potato. And I'm like,
I think Robin has some sort of like CER to potatoes because of Teresa putting that potato in the barn.
The barn. Like, I know, right?
Something about
ever
potatoes.
Since.
I thought that was Idaho, not Iowa.
Yeah, I know. So, all right, ladies, what are your takeaways from our conversation today? Since we usually do takeaways. Is this where we have the whole little do?
Yeah, you don't always know what you're going to need. And it's nice to have people to ping off of and people that are already knowledgeable in the things that you want to do because they've been there, they've done that. And so I'm so thankful that I have you two to be able to ping those things off of because with my bitey stuff, I have Nancy and I have my club. And it's so nice that I've kind of come to a place now that other people are pinging off of me. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool because of getting to see how many people have gone through things. And I start to see trends and I start to see that, well, pointy ear dogs, this and flappy ear dogs, this. And ooh, before you do much more of that, be careful. And so it's really awesome to be on both sides of that. So I really appreciate that.
That's really cool. And I think mine is that don't be afraid. Like that's the hard part. That paralysis that you can get into of being afraid to train something because it can make things a little harder, right? So what I would say is don't be afraid. Like experiment a little bit. You can always modify a little bit. You can always rename something. You can always tweak something. It's really okay. Just it's more important to train, I think, and less important to get it perfect.
Yes.
Because really, Jerson, you're never going to get it perfect right at the beginning anyways.
Right. So,
well, that goes back to Radish. I think, honestly, that I tried to make it so perfect that she was like, I'm out. I can't live up to that.
That was a lot of pressure, Mom. Yeah.
Too much pressure, but let's have some fun.
I think my takeaway is one of the things Crystal said, which was the asking your future self if that's what you want.
Yeah.
As that's a really, really good litmus test. And then the question starts becoming, okay, if my future self is happy with this, then I start going through the, how is this going to mess with whatever else I have to train? And then of course you phone a friend because otherwise you can find yourself in paralysis. And it was really funny. I was putting lights in the new building today, standing on the top of a ladder let's just say I'm glad that that's over. And having the whole thought process on the fact that I'm at the point where I want to do further out distance blinds with the dogs. And I realized that I can't do that until I've taught a remote sit and some directional stuff. And I was like, well, I guess now I know what I'm working on for the next 2 weeks, which has nothing to do with throwing birds. Yeah. So I the whole ask your future self, I think is really important. So thanks everybody for joining us today and listening us to ramble on and chat about dog training as we each sit in our respective states. And I'm going to encourage everybody to go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative!
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to K9DetectionCollaborative.com. That's K9DetectionCollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.